Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, super important episode. No advertisers, no interruptions. Brought to you by all of you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. And if you want to get involved with Turning Point USA and join us at our Student Action Summit, go to tpusa.com/SAS, July 17, 18, 19, 20. Make sure you're there at tpusa.com/SAS. And again, thank you guys for supporting us at charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. I've been really looking forward to this conversation. With us today is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has been speaking out against a lot of the topics and issues that you guys care about here on the Charlie Kirk Show, including vaccines and Dr. Fauci. So first, Robert, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. You have a new book out on Tony Fauci. What is it called, and how can people get it if they want to reference it throughout this conversation?
It's called The Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the War on Public Health and Democracy. And it's about to come out. 100% of the profits from the book go to Children's Health Defense, but we're trying to drive sales. If we get to 10,000 sales, we have 8,600 now. The New York Times has to put it on their list, which will, I think, aggrieve them, as you can imagine. But it's I think it's the real, it's the first real insight that people are going to have about the power that Tony Fauci has. He has a $7.6 billion budget. He gives away every year 13 times what Bill Gates gives away. It gives him control of virtually all the virologists in the world. And that's why every virologist knew that the coronavirus was lab generated. If known that, it's absolutely obvious from 4 hours, Chris and Anderson, who sent Tony Fauci that notice on the evening of January 5th, they all knew it. And the question is, why do they keep their mouths shut? The reason they keep their mouths shut is because he controls their budget. Between him, Wellcome Trust, which is the UK version of the Gates Foundation, Bill Gates, they control 90% of the money that's going out to the virology community every year, and they have 10,000 of these virologists on their payroll. And if you are a working virologist, you cannot afford to criticize Anthony Fauci. All the people that you see on CNN every night, the Peter Hotez and Paul Offit and Ed Schaffner and all of these people who go on and repeat the orthodoxies, parrot the orthodoxies about masks, about vaccines, about the spread of coronavirus, et cetera. They're all people who are taking money from Tony Fauci. They are not independent. The people who sit on the committee that approve the new vaccine, on the VRBPAC committee at FDA, on the ACIP committee at CDC, they work for Tony Fauci. Tony Fauci got a call from Bill Gates in the year 2000. Gates brought him out, summons him out to his $147 million mansion on the banks of Lake Washington in Seattle, sat him down in his library and said, let's form a partnership essentially to vaccinate the whole world and to give immunity from liability to the vaccine companies and to make all of Gates' partners rich. Gates owns huge shares in virtually all the big pharmaceutical companies. And his, his philanthropy is what he calls philanthrocapitalism. It is a money-making and power-generating philanthropy. It has nothing to do with public health. The public health outcomes have dropped dramatically. There's many, many studies that show that the more money a nation takes, an African country, an Asian country takes from Bill Gates for either its agricultural products, agricultural systems, or for its public health systems, the worse public health becomes, a higher infant mortality rates. There is absolutely a inverse correlation between the amount of money that these people put into public health and the actual health outcomes. You look at Tony Fauci, Charlie, he has, his entire life has been failing upward. He's in charge of protecting Americans against infectious diseases, against allergic diseases, against autoimmune diseases. When he came into office in 1968, the rate of chronic disease in American children was 6%. By 1986, when he was running that agency, it had risen to 11.8%. Today, it's at 54%. The autism rate has gone from 1 in 10,000 in my generation to 1 in every 22 boys today, according to CDC. And Tony Fauci's job is to ask the question, where is this coming from? Where is the diabetes epidemic? Where are the autoimmune epidemics, the rheumatoid arthritis, the lupus, the Guillain-Barré? Where is all these diseases coming from? Why are our kids all have food allergies today? I had 11 brothers and sisters, 77 cousins. None of them had food allergies. Why do 5 of my 7 kids have these allergies? And it has to be an environmental toxin. We know that. Genes do not cause epidemics. They can provide a vulnerability, but you need an environmental toxin. And his job is to find out what it is and to eliminate it. And his record has been just a record of failure. And if you look at his management of COVID, we have the worst, among the worst death counts in the world. You go to these Cuba, they had 14 people per million die. We had 1,600 per million. You look at, you know, Norway, 44 per million. We have among the worst records in the world. Why is anybody paying attention to this guy?
Yeah, that's well said. And the name of the book again, just I want to reemphasize that.
The Real Anthony Fauci. It's on Amazon. Go to Amazon. If you can today, you want to do something to advance this movement, go on Amazon, order a copy of the book. This is going to really piss off the New York Times and everybody else who does not want to acknowledge that there's any argument out there. And, you know, I've been researching this book for over a year. I know everything about this guy. I know everything about his really creepy relationship with Bill Gates. And, you know, all the questions that my liberal brethren ask, why would, you know, Bill Gates, isn't he a guy who just gives all this money? He's incredibly generous to all the poor people in the world. Why are you saying, like, you must be crazy to say that he's a bad guy? Anthony Fauci's given 50 years protecting public health. How can you say that he has bad motivations? And this book explains blow by blow how these two gentlemen arrived at where they are. And the things that, you know, that brought them there, looking at NIH, there have been many, many honest scientists. And if you look who have confronted pharma, Bernice Eddy, who's probably one of the most famous scientists in the history of NIH, she found a monkey virus, a very carcinogenic monkey virus in all the polio vaccines called simian virus 40. Her career was immediately destroyed by her boss at NIH. The locks were changed on her laboratory. She was locked in a basement with no telephone and was told not to talk to anybody. And her career was destroyed. John Anthony Morris, who found all the problems with the flu vaccine, 40 years he ran the flu program at NIH, and driven out of the agency because he said the flu vaccine, the fake pandemic that they dreamed up in 76, he said it's a fake. Only one person died in a worldwide pandemic, and they did it to sell flu vaccines. And that's what he said publicly. His locks were changed. He was locked in a basement. Judy Mikovits, the same thing, who confronted Tony Fauci about another mouse virus that was in some of the other vaccines, the MMR and others that are causing severe health problems. her career was destroyed. How do you last 50 years at this agency the way you do it? Why is he the J. Edgar Hoover of public health? He did it by making friends with the people that he's supposed to regulate. He's given us agency capture on steroids. He has taken that agency. He is a sock puppet for Big Pharma. And today, he's the most powerful health regulator in history. He literally shut down the global economy. It, between him and Bill Gates, they drove this shutdown by representing themselves as people who are supposedly interested in our public health. But if you really look at what's happened behind the scenes, they are people who are completely immersed in the vaccine industry, who are making vaccines, patenting them. The Moderna vaccine, which he, you know, his agency, NIAID, owns 50% of the vaccine patent. So they're rolling in dough, the money that we're now, you know, all these college students that you're defending, who are getting Moderna vaccine, essentially being coerced to undergo an unwanted medical intervention with an experimental technology that has been shoddily tested. That, and here's the thing about that vaccine, Charlie. When I say, people say, why wouldn't you take the vaccine? I would say, well, the company can't get an insurance policy. The insurance industry has said this vaccine is too risky to insure. And they're the ultimate arbiter of risk. Anybody who tells me that the vaccine is safe, I'm agnostic about vaccination. I don't, you know, I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm against any product that can't get an insurance policy. The insurance industry is the ultimate arbiter of risk. This isn't a bunch of, you know, crazy people. These are people from Wall Street with, you know, skinny ties and black suits who are making money by assessing risk. And they're saying this vaccine is too risky to insure, so we need the federal government to make us all self-insure. So if you get hurt by that vaccine, it's tough luck for you. You're paying your medical bills. You're out of luck. You are, and we're seeing all these people with lifetime autoimmune diseases now that are being hurt by this vaccine. None of them have any recourse.
So I want to take a step back and go through the history of vaccines and kind of how you got interested in this and kind of go through the work that you do and introduce yourself to our audience. And so can you talk about why you have decided to make this a lifelong crusade for you? And really, what has happened with this kind of vaccine industry? Because if you dare talk about this topic at all, I have never come across a topic where you get more hatred, more silencing, and more censorship. So just talk a little bit about how you got into this. And then also, why is it that we can't have a discussion around vaccines in America?
Yeah, I mean, it's an orthodoxy now. It's really about religion. It's not about science. People who get angry, who get rageful when you talk to them about this, none of them can cite a single scientific study. It's all about appeals to authority. You know, the vaccines work because Tony Fauci says they work or because CDC says they work. That's not science. That's the opposite of science. That's religion. Now, when you're saying this is true because somebody told me it was true, an authority that I believe told me it was true, that is not science. Science is about dissent. It's about questioning. It's about reasoning. It's about critical thinking. And that is now abolished. When you talk about vaccines, there is no critical thinking. There is no debate. There is no discussion. And they cannot afford to have this debate because there are too many difficult questions that simply cannot be answered when you're, you know, coercing an entire nation to get an experimental medical intervention that is shown to be dangerous. We know it's dangerous. And you know, you asked me how I got into this. I got into it kicking and screaming. I do not want to be doing this job. I'm an environmental attorney, and I was one of the founders of Waterkeeper, which is the biggest water protection group in the world. And I was litigating against polluters my whole life, and stumbled onto this issue. I was litigating mainly back in the early 2000s against the coal burning power plants for discharging mercury. Mercury is the most toxic, neurotoxic element in the universe that we know of. That is not radioactive. And mothers started coming. I was suing 40 power plants at that time in cement kilns around North America, and a bunch of mothers. I was touring the country, suing these companies and giving lectures on it. And these moms started showing up at all my lectures and occupying the front row, and they were the mothers of intellectually disabled children. And all of them believed that their child had been injured by mercury in vaccines, which I didn't even know there was mercury in vaccines. And they said, and by the way, I'm fully vaccinated. My children are all set, fully vaccinated. And there was nothing about me that was any vaccine. One of these women came to my home. I did not want to get into this issue. And one of them, a psychologist from Minnesota called Sarah Bridges, she had a son who got autism from a mercury vaccine. She got a $20 million judgment from the vaccine court saying, your son got autism from the mercury vaccine. You know, there's no question about it. She came to my home in the summer of 2005 with a pile this big, 18 inches deep, of scientific studies, and she asked me to read them. And she said, she put them on my front porch. She said, I'm not leaving here till you read these. And I'm used to reading science. I've brought over 500 successful lawsuits. Almost all of them involve scientific controversies. And so, you know, if I didn't know how to read science critically, I would be very bad at my job. And I started reading the abstracts from these studies, and I was just blown away because there was such a huge delta between what the government agencies and the pharmaceutical industry was telling us about vaccine safety and what the actual science was saying. And so I started calling up regulators who I knew. You know, I knew Tony Fauci. I talked to him. I knew you know, all of the big, Marie McCormick from IOM, Kathleen Stratton from IOM, Francis Collins from NIH. I started calling these people, and I realized very quickly that either in most cases, they were completely not conversant with the science. They were telling each other a myth and not actually reading science. And in some cases, like with Paul Offit, who I talked to, he just outright lied to me. And at that point, I was angry. And I began doing litigation and writing, et cetera. But I'll tell you just very briefly what happened in the vaccine industry. When I was a kid, I got three vaccines. Today's children, my kids' generation, are mandated before they're 18, if they want to go to school, to take 72 doses of about 16 different vaccines. Some of them, like hepatitis B, you'll get four or five vaccines. But altogether, there are 72 doses. Most of the vaccines are unnecessary. They're for diseases that clearly aren't even casually contagious. And they're clearly, and what happened is in 1970, they recommended a new vaccine called the diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis vaccine. And that vaccine was killing or causing severe brain injury to one in every 300 kids. CDC said it was one in a million, but NIH commissioned UCLA to do a study and on how many kids were actually getting severely injured. And the study came back very, very quickly, and it was one in 300. And they were like, holy cow, what have we done? And at that time, plaintiff's attorneys were suing the pharmaceutical company, Wyeth, you know, Glaxo, Sanofi, Pfizer, and Merck. And the companies were losing a ton of money. So Wyeth said at that point it was losing $20 in downstream liability for every dollar that it made in profits. And it went to the Reagan administration and to the Democratic Congress and said, we're going to stop making vaccines altogether unless you give us blanket immunity from liability. Well, Congress passed the Vaccine Act. It gave them immunity from liability. And what that means today is that if you get injured by a childhood vaccine, and no matter how negligent the company was, no matter how reckless they were, no matter how grievous your injury, no matter how toxic the ingredient, you cannot sue that company. There are no class actions. There's no multi-district litigation. There's no discovery. And remember, Charlie, these companies are all serial criminals. They are convicted felons. The four companies that make all of our vaccines in this country collectively have paid $35 billion in the last 10 years for falsifying signs, for defrauding regulators, for lying, cheating, stealing, blackmailing, bribing doctors. They're criminal enterprises. These are the companies that gave us the opioid epidemic. You know, do we think they care about public health? No. And so what happens when you abolish litigation against them? There's now no incentive for them to make that product safe. But you suddenly have made the product enormously profitable. So there was a gold rush. And not only are they immune from liability, but vaccines are the only medical product that never has to be safety tested. The reason for that is an artifact of CDC's legacy as the public health service, which was a quasi-military agency. The vaccine program was conceived as a national security defense against biological attacks on our country, and the regulators wanted to make sure that if the Russians attacked us with anthrax or some other biological agent, we could quickly formulate a new vaccine and administer it to 200 million American civilians with no regulatory impediments. They said, if we call it a medicine, you have to do 5 years of randomized placebo testing. And we're not going to be able to do that. So let's call it something else. We'll call it a biologic. And then we will make biologics immune from, exempt from any kind of safety testing. Oh, there's not a single vaccine that is now given to our children that has ever been safety tested against a placebo in pre-licensing studies. They're all just waved through and green-lighted without safety testing. And so nobody knows what the risk profile is of these products. But what we saw is it was a gold rush because now you don't have to do the safety testing. You're immune from liability. Those are the two biggest costs for medical products. And the third cost is marketing and advertising. You don't have to do that because the federal government is mandating that product for 78 million American children. So plus Tony Fauci and his agency usually pay for the entire development for the vaccine, and they even buy the factory for the company. So this is a dream product. You can't go wrong with it. All you need is connections. And it's like printing money for these companies. And so there was a gold rush, and they went from the three vaccines I had to the 72 vaccines that my kids had beginning in 1989. And in 1989, we saw an explosion in chronic disease in our country. So there's three categories of chronic disease that we saw, besides obesity, which is linked to vaccines, by the way, very, very strongly in many studies. Neurodevelopmental disease. So if you were born, you're a young guy, the people who listen to this who are older will recognize that we didn't know any of these diseases when we were kids. They started in 1989. ADD, ADHD, speech delay, language delay, tics, Tourette syndrome, never heard of it. Narcolepsy, never heard of it. ASD, autism, nobody in our country had heard of autism prior to Rain Man being released in 1988, and now one in every 22 boys has it. In the most recent CDC study, which is New Jersey, says now it's one in 12 boys have this. So, this is extraordinary. Then the food allergies and other allergies, allergic diseases, which we know come from vaccines. They come from the aluminum in the vaccines. Peanut allergies. When I was a kid, nobody had a peanut allergy. Now every classroom has them. asthma, eczema, anaphylaxis, etc. And the third category, and the biggest, is autoimmune disease like rheumatoid arthritis, juvenile diabetes. Again, we never knew these diseases prior to 1989. Congress actually said to EPA, tell us what year the neurodevelopment, the autism epidemic began. And the EPA scientists came back and said, 1989, it's a red line. That's the year it started. Well, that's the year all of these new vaccines started piling on. And so there are about 175 diseases that suddenly became epidemic beginning around 1989. And all of those diseases, those chronic diseases, all of those diseases are listed as side effects on the 72 vaccines that are mandated for our children. Those companies, when I was a kid, were making $187 million, those four companies, $187 million a year on vaccines. Today, that industry is $60 billion. But their real money is not coming from the vaccine. It's coming from selling the treatments, the remedies, the chronic diseases that are listed on their own manufacturer's inserts as side effects from the vaccine. The albuterol inhalers and my kids, and the $600 EpiPens that I get from my kids, the Adderall, the Ritalin, the Concerta, the anti-seizure medication, the diabetes medication, the arthritis medications, all of these, those are, if you look at the top blockbuster drugs for those four companies, and I'll remind you again, Sanofi, Pfizer, which used to be called Wyeth, Merck, and GlaxoSmithKline, they make all 72 of the vaccines given to our children. Virtually all of their top 10 blockbuster drugs are drugs that are marketed to treat injuries that are listed on their vaccine inserts as side effects of their products. So this is like the perfect industry. It's an industry where they are creating. See, listen, you get me. I got measles when I was a kid. Okay, I'm a measles survivor, right? Measles had virtually stopped killing people by the time they introduced the vaccine in America. The time they introduced the vaccine in 1963, there was only 400 people dying a year, kids. They were almost all black kids from the Mississippi Delta and from poor areas of the country that suffered from malnutrition. This was before the war on poverty. And many of them, a high percentage of them, had intellectual disabilities. So these were kids. It's almost impossible to die from measles if you're well nourished. And that's when we saw the disappearance of all these diseases because of better nutrition. But when I was a kid, I got measles, as did all of my 11 brothers and sisters. And it was like a party. It was a week home from the school where we watched Leave It to Beaver and, the Andy Griffin Show, and we played games, tag all day. What are the treatments for measles? Vitamin A, which the WHO says virtually eliminates any chance of death from measles, and chicken soup. Well, neither of them can be patented. What if you're giving one out of every 300 of those kids seizures? And what if of every 1,000 of those now have permanent lifetime epilepsy? Now you've created permanent clients who are dependent on your drugs for the rest of their lives. All of these childhood diseases, measles, mumps, chicken pox, essentially rashes that we got as a kid, all of them are self-limiting, naturally self-limiting, and all of them are treatable. None of the chronic diseases are curable, none of them. And they all require treatment for life. So it's like a cash cow for these companies. And, you wonder why they're so aggressive and why they've made it into a religion. This is why, because it is the most profitable religion in history.
So Robert, there's a lot there, and people are just starting to entertain a conversation on this topic. even in the last 18 months, I've seen people, including myself, I never really cared that much about this topic, to be perfectly honest. But now I've really started to care about it, especially when people say I'm not allowed to talk about it. So I want to ask a couple things, and this is a very simple question, but you could go any way. If you were having a child today, let's say you have a grandchild, would you vaccinate them at all? Would you pick a couple vaccinations? You said they're 72. Would you vaccinate kids today?
Well, I wouldn't give any child experimental technology, so experimental medical interventions. So I would say, you know, at this point, until you show me a test, show me a study that shows a vaccinated kid is healthier than an unvaccinated kid, and I will give every vaccine to my children. But unfortunately, if you go to our website, they will not allow that study to be done. You know, and that, and if you go to our website, there are independent studies that have been done. We have 65 of them on our website, and we will post any study on our Children's Health Defense website. If you go and look on our website, vaccinated versus unvaccinated studies, we have put everyone that we could find on there, and we have very easy to read graphs. So you can actually scan all those studies in under 5 minutes. You can look at them and you can see, you know, the food allergy, the allergic rhinitis. Vaccinated kids have 30 times the allergic rhinitis than unvaccinated kids. And so until, you know, vaccinated kids have shorter lives, they're more likely to die. Let me give you an example, Charlie. The DTP vaccine that I talked about earlier, which was pulled in the United States and Europe, Bill Gates and WHO give it to every child in Africa every year. So they give about 161 million children to receive that vaccine every year that white people don't take. Okay, but they're giving it to these kids in Asia and Africa. Now, and it is the most popular vaccine in the world, thanks to Bill Gates. It is used as the flagship vaccine to determine compliance with by various governments with their WHO vaccine program. So in order to get their money for their HIV programs, for their health ministries, they have to demonstrate that 80 or 90% of their kids have been vaccinated with this very, very dangerous vaccine that was, you know, hurting all these children. So Bill Gates asked the Danish government to support the program to give the DTP in 2016. And the Danish government said, well, you know, let's actually see what the outcome is for the DTP vaccine. Let's look at all-cause mortalities following vaccination. And they went to Guinea-Bissau on the west coast of Africa, which had a protocol for distributing the vaccine that had created kind of a natural experiment. The way that they gave it out, half the kids in the country at certain ages were vaccinated and half were not. No, it's completely randomized, so it was a perfect natural experiment. And so the Danish government went in and looked at 20 years of data, and they were able to compare the health of vaccinated kids to unvaccinated kids. And this study, it wasn't just the Danish government. It was on Novo Nordisk, which is a huge vaccine company, and Statens Serum Institute of Denmark, which is the other biggest vaccine company in Scandinavia. And they commissioned the best scientist in the world, this very, very prestigious group. It was led by Peter Abe, who is like a deity in African vaccine, very pro-vaccine. And another guy called Sigrid Morgensen, who is the lead author. If you want to look this study up, it's called Morgensen 2017, and it's published in eBioPharma in January 2017. So that study, what they did, they looked at all of this data, and what they found shocked them, which is that girls who got the vaccine were 10 times more likely to die than children who did not get the vaccine. And they were dying of things that nobody had ever connected to the vaccines. They were dying of pneumonia, of respiratory infections, of diphtheria, of bilharzia, anemia, malaria, and dysentery. And nobody had ever looked and said, holy cow, it's only the vaccinated girls who are dying. And the vaccine was protecting them from diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. But it had ruined their immune systems. So that even minor infections with other illnesses would overwhelm their immune system. And nobody had noticed it for 20 years. And the Danish government, you know, the scientists who are involved, who are very, very pro-vaccine, are begging the WHO to stop giving this vaccine to kids. And yet they're still doing it. And so when you ask me that question, my answer to you is, you know, I'm not going to give my kid a medical intervention unless I understand what the risks are and have a clear idea what the benefits are. And for these medical interventions, you need to look at 5 or 10 years and see, you know, there are over 50 studies now that show that if you got measles when you were a kid, you're much more less likely to get Hodgkin's lymphoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, ovarian cancer, atopic diseases, and cardiac diseases when you're older. So in ways that we don't understand, getting these childhood diseases, the same is true with chickenpox and mumps, getting these childhood diseases somehow alters your immune system and makes it more robust against certain other illnesses. We need a study that says it's still worthwhile to get it because those illnesses kill a lot more people than measles ever did. And, you know, we need to know, have a real science here that says, okay, here are the risks from getting this disease, and here are the benefits of getting the vaccine, and here are the costs of getting the vaccine. Those kind of studies are the studies that Tony Fauci is in charge of doing, but he makes sure that they never happen. And let me tell you this also, Charlie. If you're a scientist at a university, here's how Tony Fauci's system works. This is not how it always worked, but this is kind of the template. He develops the molecules for new drugs in his laboratory. So he will take, you know, an existing molecule or potion, let's say, you know, let's say take Pepsi, you can buy it over the counter. And he'll have thousands of little petri dishes filled with coronavirus. He'll drop the Pepsi in each of those and see what happens to the coronavirus. And he'll experiment with hundreds and hundreds of molecules. And eventually they'll find a molecule that kills all the coronaviruses in that petri dish. And then he said, okay, this thing kills the heck out of coronavirus. Let's give it to an animal to see if it kills the animal. He gives it to rats and guinea pigs and ferrets. And if the rats and guinea pigs and ferrets don't die from the drug, and he says, well, now we got a drug that might work. So he farms that out to scientists at universities. And those guys are called PIs, principal investigators. And they are usually very powerful people in the university. They run the departments, they chair, they're the deans, et cetera. And they do the phase 1, phase 2 trials. So they recruit maybe 40 people at first and give them this drug. We know it works on animals. We know it works in petri dish. We know it doesn't kill the animal. So you take it to see what happens. And that's what they do. And Tony Fauci will pay that scientist $15,000 to $20,000 for every patient he recruits. The university skims off half of that and keeps it. So now the university is involved in this, and they're making the money. If he gets through the phase 2 trials, then they sell the drug to a pharmaceutical company that pays for phase 3, which is really expensive. And the pharmaceutical company then takes part of the patent. The PI takes part of the patent. The university takes part of the patent. Tony Fauci takes part of the patent for NIAID, and he can give patent walking rights to his employees, the guys he likes, the guy he's trying to help. And they can get $150,000 a year from every patent that they own. That's according to to HHS rules. With Moderna vaccine, there's four and maybe six people who he's hand-selected at NIAID that are making $150,000 a year from the Moderna vaccine. So that's how he rewards loyalty and makes sure everybody loves it. Now, here's what I'm getting to. If there is a scientist at Columbia University or Berkeley or Harvard or Baylor University who says, you know what, there's a big database out there called the VSA, Vaccine Safety Data Link, and we could look in that and see whether vaccines are causing autism. And nobody's ever actually done that. And I want to do that because that's a cool area to study. He decides he's going to do that study. His dean will immediately get a call from one of Tony Fauci's deputies saying, if you let this joker do that study, we are going to bankrupt your university. That's the power he has. He has the power all across the nation to make sure not only to dictate what science is done, but also to make sure that, you know, the science he doesn't want done never gets done.
So what you're describing is very similar to the type of industry that the liberals I grew up with used to detest, like the weapons of mass destruction lie or the CIA or the NSA. So, Robert, you obviously come from one of the legacy Democrat families in America. The liberals that I thought liberals cared about the causes of the little man against big banks and the big military-industrial complex. I'm not trying to politicize this by any means. What I'm saying, though, is it seems that the people that would care about this issue are suppressing speech about this issue. Can you help explain that to me, why it seems as if the powers that be, especially in the current administration and Tony Fauci and the likes, they seem perfectly okay with pandering to big pharma, while it seems as if they, in other senses, they want to challenge those big power institutions?
Yeah, I mean, I watched it happen over the years. I understand why, how liberals got to this point. And, you know, I briefly, what happened was, you know, after Earth Day in 1970, we passed 28 major environmental laws in this country, and a lot of health laws in the early 70s and 80s, and the industry started coming back and fighting them. And the Democrats kind of formed these bonds with the health regulators and the environmental regulators, where the Republicans in Congress were constantly going after the budget, trying to discredit them, trying to make them more industry friendly. And the Democrats got in a posture of defending the agencies and defending the people who worked in the agency. Mm-hmm. And though they're also ideologically, you know, they were very compatible. Those were agencies that were helping Democrats with environmental issues, on toxics, on cigarettes, on even on guns. And so they became, you know, part of the tribe. And it was still very fluid in 2016 during the measles epidemic. But what happened then is, in order to pass Obamacare, the Democrats had to make a deal with the pharmaceutical companies. They had to get pharma on board. And suddenly it became permissible. Democrats usually would not accept money from, you know, dirty industries. But they now started accepting a lot of money. It became permissible within the party to accept pharma money. And so they became more deeper and deeper aligned with pharma. And then the measles outbreak happened, and the concrete began to harden on this kind of, you know, this alignment. And then when Trump ran and, you know, talked openly about the possibility that vaccines were injuring people, the line became very, very solid. As you know, it's become very polarized now, where anything that Obama liked, every Republican hates, anything that Trump likes, Democrats automatically hates, and critical thinking is gone. And one of the things, Charlie, that I recognize is that the division and the polarization is That is a strategy by people who are trying to take all of our rights, to keep us separate, to focus on, you know, very, very inflammatory issues, and to portray people on both sides of the aisle as unworthy, as anti-American, as anti-values or whatever, and as I'm not worthy of even listening to. And so everybody is kind of going into their camps. And it's become very, very tribalistic. And that is what we used to call the Bourbon strategy, which is the strategy for causing. And it's the same kind of cyber strategy the CIA uses when it wants to take over a country. It shatters the economy. It shatters morale. It polarizes people. And then the chaos that comes in imposes authoritarian control. And so I really try to avoid that and try to avoid characterizing people, even those who criticize me or disagree with me, because I think it's important to bring everybody onto our side. And as you point out, what the liberals are doing today is completely against every traditional liberal value. And, you know, they're doing it not because they have turned into bad people. They're doing it because they drank the Kool-Aid. And they're hypnotized by this orthodoxy, and I think we have to figure out ways to build bridges between, you know, all of the people who are being victimized by this, and turn them against these elites, the Gates, the Fauci's, the pharmaceutical companies, who are our true enemies.
So in closing, we just announced a no forced vaccination push at Turning Point USA to try to give students support and to do a massive public relations campaign against the forced vaccination for the COVID-19 vaccine. Robert, in closing, what can people do? This is a topic that gets the most enthusiasm from our audience, yet people feel the most helpless. I have to say, out of everything we talk about on our podcast, it is this: I want to do something, but I have no idea what to do. What are some practical steps of people that have some sort of interest in this crusade?
Well, I mean, the main thing is, you know, is to inform yourself and to be informed so that you're not, there's a lot of disinformation out there, and a lot of it is coming from the intelligence agencies who are deeply involved in this project and from the, you know, industry that seeds the, you know, the misinformation. And then, you know, we end up repeating it on our side and discrediting ourselves. Go to the Defender, which is our newsletter, and we make sure to vet every fact in there so that what you're reading in the Defender is going to be true. And we don't put rumors in there, and we try to deflate the rumors when they come. Keep yourself informed, and then, you know, talk to your neighbors and don't back down. Don't comply. Don't back down. Try not to be, you know, to be violent or angry, but continue to insist on your right. We are right. Our side is right. Our values need to prevail. You get the Defender. If you want to support us, we really believe that litigation is is ultimately going to be our salvation. And we are suing Gates. We're suing Facebook. We're suing all of the Google. We're suing all of the purveyors of this. And Fauci and everybody else is behind it. We have teams of lawyers, the people who brought the Monsanto cases with me and all the other big cases I've been involved with. But we have real plaintiff's attorneys who know what they're doing. On these cases, we need your support. Please support CHD. Join us, even if you're not going to send us any financial support, because we need to build the army. And you know, what I would, this is going to sound self-interested, but I want to give a plug to my book. If you want to do something really concrete, buy a copy of The Real Anthony Fauci. Help me drive it onto the bestseller list. Again, all the profits go to Children's Health Defense Fund, to me. And it's a really important book. It will help you understand what is happening to your world today. Where did this apocalypse come from? How was the CIA involved? How are the intelligence agencies involved? How are the pharmaceutical companies involved? And how are they all working together? Historically, what happened? I trace it all. And, you know, people need to understand it.
Well, thank you, Robert. And kind of in the tradition of the Kennedy family is always picking very tough fights. And I think you're at the right place to ask these questions and to continue this fight forward. And I want to have you back on to talk about this even more, because we have, I probably have 2,000 questions we got about vaccines, but you covered that really, really well. So the real Anthony Fauci, everyone pick up a copy. And thank you, Robert, so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Charlie. And thank you for leading the fight on this issue.
Thank you. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. God bless you guys. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.